situation. Cricket, did you have a question?
Yes, I do.
What is your question, Cricket?
My question is, are there any rules or parameters when we do our homework presentation?
What kind of rules are you thinking about?
I mean, can we come in a costume? Can we do it in a song?
You can come in a costume. You can do it in a song.
Oh, you can. So we can do anything.
Present.
Okay.
Communicate. But don't collaborate. So there's someone else here that's got that same topic. This is not a group project. Did you understand that, Cricket?
Yes. I asked permission and you said no.
Denied.
Sorry.
I always find it's easier to say I'm sorry than to get permission. So we're going to talk about clarity, our last one, authenticity. Connection and clarity. And this is an important one for me. Nehemiah 8 verse 8 is one of the great Bible texts for clarity. So they read from the book of the law of God, making it clear and giving the meaning so that people could understand what was being read. Unclear communication is one of my great pet peeves in every form, from trying to accomplish something on a particular website. It's unclear, what am I supposed to do next? Why didn't they not arrange this website in such a way that I know exactly what to do in the right steps, in the right order? It's unclear communication. It frustrates me. Or a movie that's not clear. What are you talking about? What is this movie about? Directions that are unclear because they left out important, needed information. Communication, public speaking, Bible preaching that assumes certain things and is unclear is a great frustration to me. Our mandate is to read the book of the law of God and make it clear, giving the meaning so people can understand. That's what clarity is about. Now, clarity requires focus first. You see, when you're public speaking, it's different than informal casual communication. Although you may have a conversational tone, it's not a conversation. It's a presentation. And you have to put a lot of labor into arranging your material in such a way so that it communicates clearly what you're trying to say. You don't work that hard when you're just having a conversation with someone. So this is different. You've got to do the work to get exactly on paper in a way that you're going to communicate exactly what you want to say to us. So I like to think about a presentation as a journey. I am trying to take people from where they are to a specific location. And the more specific that location is, the more effective my communication is going to be. So if I ask a person for directions somewhere, I'm in one city and I want to get to somebody's house in another city, I don't want just general directions that'll get me to that city, or directions that'll get me to that person's neighborhood, or even directions that will get me to that person's street. So I don't want to knock on every door in that street till I find my friend. I want directions that will take me to that person's doorstep. So when I knock on the door opens, my friend is there. That's how clear I want my communication to be. That's how clear I want the journey. I'm not taking it to just some kind of vague, general sort of place, but a very specific place. And the more specific that is in my mind, the more, or the better chance, at least, I'll have at making clear communication. Does that make sense to you? So you're thinking about a journey. Now, every journey starts with the end in mind. Right? Sometimes we call them outcome-based objectives. And I write objectives for all of my communication. Whenever I'm speaking, what exactly do I want to communicate? And until I've got that answered exactly, specifically, clearly, I am not ready to communicate. So generally, I accumulate my material first because I start with a general focus, right? Accumulate my material. In the process, then, I've got to decide what exactly out of all of this wealth of material do I want to say. That's my destination. So every journey has one destination. Every message has one central point. Now, like any journey, if I'm going to leave my house in Nashville to get to my father's house in St. Louis, there are three major interstates that I have to take to get there. But I got one destination in mind. Three specific segments that will get me there. So how many points do you have in a message? It doesn't matter how many points you have as long as you got one destination. See, sometimes people have 3 points, but really they have three destinations. Yeah, we don't want three destinations, we want one destination. How many ever points it takes to get us to that destination? You determine that. Although there should be a limit. Although I remember one time Pastor June came to the pastor school and had a message entitled 50 Keys to Effective Church Planting. Okay, now I think that's probably too many. Even though he did have all day. I remember he only got 17. And that's still pretty significant. A friend of ours, we heard a sermon not that long ago. And he actually, in his sermon, this was a Sunday morning, he had 30 points. Yeah, 30 points. 30. And the same person, different sermon, different time, for his conclusion, he had 7 points. Yeah, I told him afterwards, we'll just call him John, that's not his name. I said, John, loved your sermons. He got it. Yeah, yeah. Oh, he got it. Yeah. I mock him about it all the time. So, one destination, how many ever routes it takes will be different. All right. So, number one, under focus, create a single, concise statement to answer the question, what do I want people to know and do? What am I trying to accomplish? And the getting of that statement is one of the most crucial things you do. And because people don't do the work to get that, their communication is unclear. Their communication ends up being like, let me see if I'm going to say that later. Their communication ends up being like this. A lot of loose thumbtacks. Do you have thumbtacks? You know what I mean by that? Yeah, thumbtacks. As opposed to a message ought to be one big nail. It's one big nail hammered continually. See, some messages are just thumbtack messages. There's good little thoughts here and there. You got a little quote. Okay, that's interesting. That was a verse. Yeah, it's a new take on that. That helped me. What was the person trying to say? I have no idea. I come away from some message and I tell my wife, if someone put a gun to my head and said, tell me what that message was about or I'm going to kill you, I would have to say, go ahead and pull the trigger. I could not tell you what the message was about. Oh, I could tell you a few points of thoughts. This was a thought. That was a thought. This was an interesting thought. It's just a lot of little thumbtacks, right? But I want a big, gigantic nail. Bam, 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 bam. Hammered. So that when it's done, I know exactly what that message was about. And when you don't take the time to get your single, concise statement, your message will just be thumbtacks. What exactly are you trying to hammer into my head? Once you get that, number two, build your entire presentation around that single, concise statement. So your order might look a little different, but for me, it's starting with the general idea. Okay, you got a general assignment, right? That's the general idea. Then I begin to do the research. Get a lot of data. In the process of getting that data, something begins to crystallize, and I work hard to craft that into my objective, my single concise statement. From then, I ask myself the question, which of that data will accomplish that objective? What'll get me there? And then it becomes the painful process of leaving some of your best material on the cutting room floor. You know what I mean by that? It's an analogy from the movies. Sometimes your best shots, ooh, that was a really beautiful artistic shot. But it doesn't get the audience where I want to take them. And so we got to, it hurts. Cut it. Leave it. So sometimes your best illustration, that's such a good story. But it doesn't get my audience where I want them to go. Just have to leave it. Because every bit of data has to fit in that on that focused statement. This will help define the parameters of your topic and keep you focused during your delivery. The parameters. It's exactly what I'm saying, you see. What makes it and what doesn't. Okay, that's a really great thought, but it'll just lead people off target. I got to leave it. Every story, example, and idea should support your single concise statement. You see, it's almost like, I think of it like an hourglass shape. You know what I mean? Do you have hourglass?
Yeah.
Right? So the funnel starts broad at the top. That's gathering all the data. But you're gradually narrowing it down till you get to that real sharp focus exactly. Then from that point now, all of your data is flowing out of that single point. It's all fitting together, supporting it, hammering the nail of what you want to communicate. Clarity requires focus. And I've condensed a lot of material into a few points there, but we don't have much time. Then clarity requires form. Form. I'm quoting from the Prince of Preachers, Charles Spurgeon, 19th century Baptist preacher. He said, in talking about form, don't just throw the seed at people. It's a good metaphor. I've heard sermons like that. It's just someone just throwing seed at me. Just a lot of random, loosely connected ideas. He said, don't just throw seed at people. Grind it into flour, bake it into bread, and slice it for them. And it wouldn't hurt if you put a little honey on it. Honey, that's the illustrations and the stories, you see. But you've taken all this loose material and you've done the work of grinding it and forcing it into a shape a form that's clear that people can take home with them. Okay, you add clarity with a strong introduction. Add clarity with a strong introduction. Introductions are so important, you know. Statistically, they tell us that within the first 7 minutes of meeting someone, we begin to form very significant opinions about that person. And the very first few minutes of your presentation, people begin to form ideas about whether they should listen or not. Because everybody's asking the question, why should I listen to this person? And there are plenty of other things to do while listening to a sermon. I once saw a book one time called 101 Things to Do While Listening to a Sermon. Oh, I think there's at least that many. I know I've done that many in 35 years of listening to sermons. A lot of other things you can do. And now the opportunities are so much greater with electronic media, right? Because they think we're looking up the scripture or typing the notes on the iPad, but really, we left this sermon a long time ago, and we're checking out what movies are opening this week in Metro Manila, just as a random possible thing that someone could search for. So your introductions are so crucial to connecting with your people and producing clarity. Good introductions answer the question, why should I listen to you? Why should I listen to you? Who are you? Why do you deserve these next so many minutes of my life? Good introductions, continuing, connect the speaker with his listener. Think about that in your introductions. How do I connect with my audience? You got to connect in the introduction somehow. And then good introductions come in many forms. Many different forms. So many different ways to start. You got to be creative. There's the informative beginning, where you give us some important data that is significant and interesting. And how you're going to connect that or answer that question. Okay, I'm listening. There's the personal introduction, how this is, what this has meant in your life. And okay, that's kind of interesting. I'm listening. There's the shocking introduction. It takes a certain kind of person to bring that off, but that can be very effective. One time I was at an outdoor Jesus festival in the mid-late 70s, and Lauren Cunningham was the introduced speaker. And Lauren Cunningham was at that time, and still is, the international director of YWAM, Youth with a Mission. So very much anticipated speaking engagement. About 15,000 people on the hillside, outdoors, listening. And Mr. Cunningham stood up. His opening line was very loudly said, Jesus Christ is a liar. And a long pause. And you can bet every single person in that crowd was engaged. And after a long pause, he said, Jesus Christ is a lunatic. And an even longer pause. Now people are definitely nervous. And then, of course, if you know the C.S. Lewis statement, you understand what the third point is. Or Jesus Christ is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. You must decide. And the whole place erupted in praise and applause. Mostly, I think, because we were relieved he wasn't a heretic. Wow, that was 1977. That was a few years ago. But I remember that like it was yesterday. Some people can pull it off. others can't. If you can, it can be effective. It can be effective. Number two, you add clarity with a strong conclusion. Strong conclusion. These are some of the basic elements of your form. A strong conclusion. Good conclusions reinforce the main idea of the presentation. Don't give me new significant data at the end. Don't leave me wondering or questioning, what about that? You didn't tell me enough about that. The ending reinforces something significant you've already told me. And then good conclusions, number two in our subpoint, emphasize application. You tell your listener what you want them to do. Every message should end with a challenge. Make sure that challenge is clear, too. I mean, you're not just talking to be talking. There's something you want us to do about this material. And so give us the challenge and make it clear. And then, one of my favorite thoughts here, good conclusions end. You must learn when and how to stop. The art of stopping is a great art. It takes a while to learn. Some people just don't know when to stop. Of course, fortunately, in 2 weeks when you give your presentation, we'll have cues for you. You'll know when to end. I was telling somebody, we were talking about this. Sometimes those clues, those time clues don't work. You know, people just preach right through them. I had a friend one time, he was young and just starting to preach, and I brought him with me on a preaching assignment. I gave him one of my sessions, but I had clear parameters on how much time. And so I said, here's the cards, okay, I'm going to flash these cards, and when you get these cards, follow them, okay? Yeah, sure. But I got to the one, he went through the one and kept going. So I thought, how do I get to him, right? So there was an honorarium involved, and I was going to split part of the honorarium with him. So what the next card I flashed was a minus $50. You're already at minus 50. Want to keep going? Because my next card was minus 100. And we'll keep flashing cards. Let me tell you, that worked like a charm. He somehow found a way to end. I really didn't take the money away from him, but it sure worked good. We should do that, huh? Would that work? So for our pastors, our lead pastors, here's how much your pay will be docked. 50, 100, 200, 1,000. Just keep. You want to keep going? I tell you, that'll cure them fast, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You're giving away about your pastor. Good conclusions, Ann. You add clarity by repetition. Repetition. Most of the way we learned to communicate in school was written communication. And written communication is different than oral communication. So in written communication, you don't repeat yourself very often. And your teachers will teach you not to do that. But oral communication is totally different. See, in written communication, someone can go back or they can slow down and think about and make sure they got it before they get to the next. In oral communication, your audience doesn't have that luxury. They can't just, can you stop for a minute? Hold on. I need to think about that. Okay, I got it. Go ahead. We don't have that luxury, right? And yet, oftentimes, we lose people. So repetition is a way to continually reinforce what you're really trying to say. Two people. And it's an essential part of an effective clarity in your communication. So don't be afraid of repetition. It's almost impossible to repeat yourself too often in verbal communication. Repetition always leads to clarity. You add clarity through illustrations. Illustrations. And I'm going to give you a few ideas about illustrations, because if there's one simple skill that will take you from wherever you are as a communicator and immediately put you in another class, is the ability to use illustrations effectively. Wherever you're at, and you might think of yourself as pretty good or really good or pathetic or somewhere in between, but wherever you are, you'll raise your skill level immediately by increasing and developing the ability to tell a good story, to use illustrations. So, a few things about illustrations. They clarify our message. Clarify our message. Charles Spurgeon said, if didactic speech, which is just teaching, fails to enlighten your hearers, you can always open up a window and let in the pleasant light of analogy. Illustrations are like windows. Windows let the light in. So when you're communicating something, a story will make it so clear in a person's mind. Illustrations keep people's attention. You watch this happen. As you're talking, especially if it's a longer talk, you'll see some people starting to lose focus. You can see, you know, they're going different places. You know, the problem is that the human brain can process information at about 600 to 800 words a minute. But the average communicator speaks at about 150 to 200 words a minute. What that means in practical reality is while you're talking, people will take trips. Now, different people go different places. But everybody goes somewhere at some point. And you'll watch it as a speaker. You've had someone engaged, and then all of a sudden you look over. They're still looking at you. Or at least their head is pointed towards you, and their eyes are on that general track. But they're looking at something beyond you. There's a glassy look in their eyes. You know, they've gone on a trip. I sometimes wonder, where'd they go? But when you start to tell a story, you'll watch, they'll all come back. They all come back for the stories. Now, they might go again when the story's over, but they'll all come back for the story. English Anglican bishop by the name of Quayle once said, the sin of boring an audience is an exceedingly mortal sin. Now, y'all are former Roman Catholics, right? You understand the distinction between venial sins and mortal sins, right? Venial sins are ones that you can get forgiven of. Mortal sins, there is no forgiveness. Illustrations persuade people. There's a logic in an illustration to get them to think differently. And I actually have illustrations for all of these points, but time will not allow. Illustrations assist the memory. The memory. It happens to me all the time where I return to a place I had been 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, and people are still there. It always happens. They'll remember a sermon and a particular point, but it's almost always tied to a story. An illustration. You told that story, and I remember that point. Sometimes 20 years, 25 years later. That's been my personal experience. It assists the memory. Illustrations stir the emotions. They stir the emotions, and that's a good thing because the emotions are involved in making new quality decisions. It's a good thing. Now, there's an art to using illustrations for maximum effort. Let me give you a few statements. Use them frequently. Use them frequently. I once did a study of all of the teaching material in the book of Luke. All the verses where Jesus is teaching. And there's almost 500. Now, these are not verses when he's having a conversation or doing a miracle, but he's involved in teaching. Almost 500. And then I went back and asked how many of those is he using some kind of illustrative material? A parable, an analogy, a simile, something illustrative. And it's about 248, 249. So 50% of Jesus' teaching was illustrations. So frequently. So you got 5 minutes, right, in 2 weeks? About 2.5 of it ought to be illustrations. That is, if you want to be like Jesus. Maybe you don't, I don't know. So if you do, use them frequently. Use them accurately. I'm glad I don't have the time to tell you the embarrassing stories. What I use in illustration had gotten my facts wrong and humiliated myself in public. Get your facts right. Use them appropriately. In other words, connect them to your audience. So if I'm invited to speak to the Manila Garden Club, I wouldn't use an illustration from Rocky III. Right? I would try to think of some kind of horticultural illustration to connect with my audience. Appropriately, use them dramatically. Learn how to tell a story. And there's an art to it, and there is something of a science also. Watch people who are good and learn from them. And then finally, use them at the beginning and the end. Grab me with a story and wrap it up with a good story. Number five, you add clarity to the use of verbal skills. Verbal skills. Let's look at these rather quickly. Number one is vocabulary development. Vocabulary development. We talked about that briefly last semester under developing charisma, but I love every opportunity to hammer this home. Words are what we use to communicate with. That's the toolbox. And the more stuff you got in the toolbox, the more effective you'll be. J.B. Phillips once said that if words are to enter people's hearts and bear fruit, they must be the right words, shaped to pass the defenses and explode silently and effectively within the mind. That is a great quote. Okay, let's talk about a few more verbal skills. All these are learned, too. The pause. The pause. Pauses hold your audience's attention. It's really a fascinating thing. My wife and I always have a fan going when we sleep. We have to have white noise. You understand the concept of white noise, right? It's that droning sound. And we can't sleep if it's too quiet. If there's not some whirling noise. Now, I'm not talking about the noise of the jeepneys honking incessantly outside our Surrendra window. Hello, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Do you really need to honk your horn? I guess you do. But it's that droning sound, you see. That's what puts us to sleep. What wakes us up? What was that? The fan stopped. That's what wakes us up. You see, as you're talking, it's the droning of the fan. What wakes your audience up or brings them back from the trip is when you stop talking. All of a sudden, huh? What happened? Come on back. I brought you back with a pause. Pauses emphasize important words and ideas. And they always add drama to a good story. Knowing when to hold and how long to hold the story for the punchline can make the difference between that story having maximum impact or falling flat. Next skill, voice volume, tempo. What? Volume and volume? I made a mistake there. Voice volume should be your fill-in. No, it's not. There's something else. Anyway, voice is not volume.
Pitch.
Not pitch, no. Now, don't worry about it.
Quality.
Whatever. Quality.
Voice quality.
Yeah. Few thoughts about that. Speak clearly and articulately. You have to practice this. You're so used to in communication with friends, just slurring the ends of your words and rushing through statements. But enunciate, speak clearly. One of the compliments that I get that I appreciate is that international students, when I'm speaking in America, international students like to hear me because they can really understand my English. Because I articulate clearly. And I work hard at making sure my words are pronounced accurately and articulately, so I'm well understood by people in the audience who may have a difficult time with English. And speak in complete sentences to avoid the dreaded embolalia. The dreaded embolalia. Do you know what embolalia is? It's embolalia. Embolalia is the verbal filler that we put in our communication when we're not praise the Lord sure exactly what to say. Embolalia. It's a disease that most of the human race is unfortunately afflicted with. Bad case of embolalia. Even professionals. If I could just get on my little soapbox for a moment. Few things irritate me more than professionals. People are paid to communicate in public. Media personnel who use all those verbal fillers. Newscasters. Now, the anchor, they don't because they're reading from a teleprompter, right? So they don't. But people on the field, filled with embolalia. So you're a professional. I expect that from the average person, but from you? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Do you feel my pain?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. When I teach this in my class, my students, because I start calling them out on it. So I will count sometimes. They'll do a 6-minute message. And sometimes if they're really bad, I will count the amount, the number. So in 6 minutes, you had 123 embolalia violations. They get pretty self-conscious. And we have the embolalia police catching people, but it's the only way you can do it. Animation and gestures. Animation and gestures. Gestures are those specific motions of the arms, hands, and body to help express your thoughts and emphasize your speech. And these are usually, the rule of thumb here is, if you are by nature an expressive communicator, then when you speak publicly, you ought to be just as expressive. If you're not generally or naturally that way, then it looks a little strange. That all of a sudden you get on stage and you're the gesture man, right? But if that's just a part of you, then it works. And another rule of thumb is the larger the venue, the more exaggerated the gestures have to be, right? So if I'm speaking at the Fort, right, where there's a large audience and there are people, they're hundreds of miles away from me, but on that top balcony. So a little gesture like this doesn't have much effect. You have to be a bit more flamboyant. Now, if I start doing that here, you'll think that's weird. Strange, weird, bald American. What's your story? But it works in that kind of setting, you see? So if you're in your little small group and you start, no, I'm learning gestures. You're weird. Movement. I like movement. Movement is useful for getting and keeping attention. That's, you've experienced this all the time in the negative. Someone is speaking and all someone gets up and walks out, everybody looks at that person. So movement will get attention. That's why I concentrate when I'm speaking in public on staying real still the first few minutes, because I'm going to need that movement to get your attention later. See? So then when I start to move, now I can use that device to get people back focused with me. And sometimes when you're really losing them, you've got to go places where people don't expect you to go. Right? So there's sort of a zone that you're kind of allowed to be in. And as long as you stay in that zone, you're okay. But if you get outside of that zone, well, what's he doing? What's going on? Then they really start paying attention. I know Joey does that at least once or twice during his sermon at the Fort, because it's so large a venue, right? So at least once, but often twice, he'll come off the stage, walk down the audience. And during that time, people are more attentive, right? Because they don't know, he might walk by and see them texting their friend, and so they get a little bit more nervous and, yes, paying much more closer attention to what is being said. Now, you've got to avoid the abuses of movement. Some people abuse it, and it becomes nothing more than a ping pong match, right? It's like a caged lion, back and forth and back and forth. Now, at first, you're attentive, and man, that guy's definitely excited. But after a while, it just becomes the whirring fan. It's the same old thing that'll put you to sleep. And you also have to avoid nervous movement. Okay? That is not as exaggerated, probably, as a ping pong match, but it's just the fiddling. Right? It's just kind of moving around and you're making us nervous. So avoid those extremes of swaying, tapping, fiddling with your notes, a pencil, something like that. All right, few minutes, few conclusion, few practical tips, all right, to bring it all together. Walk confidently onto the stage. So whether you feel confident or not, just throw your shoulders back and walk up there like the world needs to hear what you've got to say. Number two, pause before you begin. Take a deep breath. Look straight at your audience. Get yourself focused. Three, speak clearly with good articulation so that the ends of words are heard. Good articulation. Make sure your posture is good, that you're standing evenly balanced. Yeah, I always got to think about that one. I'm bad there. Number five, make eye contact with the whole audience, not just a particular section, maybe where your friend is sitting, or they seem to be more friendly. You got to survey the whole crowd, right? And be conscious to do that. Don't neglect those people out on the fringes. Develop a natural presentation style. Don't copy others. And just a few lists of do nots. Do not sing the audience to sleep through repetitive speech patterns. Although that sort of goes with Tagalog, doesn't it? It's a sing-songy kind of, yeah. Hello, Mom. Hello, sir. Hello, sir. Hello, Mom. Hello, sir. Hello, sir, Mom. And then it's not even, then it's just all merged together, sir, Mom. Hello, sir, Mom. Anyway, don't sing your audience to sleep. Don't sway. Sway, it's nervous movement, right? You're swaying. Fold your arms. Put your hands in your pockets. Although both of those can be effective if you do them deliberately and you're self-conscious about it. I mean, you're self-consciously doing that to get an effect, to communicate something. It's just when you're doing it, you're not really aware of it. Brush your hair continually from your face. That was an issue for me for a long time. Pick or rub your nose, okay? I mean, you might think it was a rub, but we know it was a pick. It was a pick. Lord, thank you for the Holy Spirit that leads us into the truth and equips and empowers us to communicate effectively. Lord, help us these next 2 weeks as we begin thinking about communication and preparing. Lord, make us more effective communicators of the things that are important to you. And we thank you for it in Jesus' name. Amen. All right.